Track 7, London Landmarks. Now we come to what is our final piece in the London Landmarks series. Over the past few years, we've heard many people talking about places or buildings which have inspired them, and this is no exception. Here's the director of the Dulwich Art Gallery with his detailed description of the innovative and forward-looking building of which he's the head. And listen out for yet another reference to an Egyptian tomb.
Hello, my name is Christoph Wachter, and I'm the director of the Wallace Collection in London. I love our collection, of course, but the Dulwich Picture Gallery has always had a special place in my heart since I first came to England in the 80s. At that time, I came to do a course on English and French neoclassical architecture that included Sir John Soane, the great British architect whose life spent the turn of the 19th century. I've always admired his work. When I arrived, I looked with delight at his London buildings and got to know the fascinating museum in Bloomsbury, which is dedicated to his life and his work, the Soane Museum. And then I discovered the Dulwich Picture Gallery. Discover is probably the right word. I love going to Dulwich because it feels like an adventure every time. Taking friends on their first visit is a special joy, and I still remember when I took my parents for the first time. It really is a voyage of discovery, not just an outing. It's rather an occasion. You need time, a half day, or even better, a whole day, to get there and to enjoy it. It's not a question of popping in, as you can to the many great London galleries. And it's manageable, just the right size. There are many wonderful things inside, of course, but you can see everything in the day and not be exhausted. But it's the architecture that excites me most about Dulwich. With most architecture, it helps to know the background to explain why a building looks as it does. This is especially so with the Dulwich Picture Gallery, I find. Dulwich was the first purpose-built art gallery in England and, in 1817, the first to be opened to the public. The owner of the original collection, Sir Francis Bourgeois, had, in turn, been left it by his friend and patron Noel Desenfants and his wife Margaret. The idea was to have a mausoleum in which the three friends were to be buried within a gallery that housed their collection. The site eventually chosen was Dulwich College, at that time a charitable institution, to whom Bourgeois left all his treasures. Before he died, he asked Sir John Soane, also a friend of the trio, to build the gallery next to the college chapel. And all the three friends are still interred inside the tiny mausoleum towards the back of the building, opposite the entrance. The original design was much more elaborate than the building that's here today. Financial strictures meant a great deal of imaginative rethinking on Sir John's part. Rethinking that has resulted in a far more innovative building, a series of interlinked rooms lit by daylight from overhead, one that has influenced the design of art galleries ever since. There's always a special moment when I turn in from the tree-lined road, stop inside the gates, and pause for a few moments. Never fails. Each time, the building's secret begins to reveal themselves anew. It was radical in its day and very, very dramatic now. On the left are the shady lawns of the small park. On the right is the elegant new glass restaurant. But straight ahead, at the end of a short path, is Sir John Soane's magical building. I'll explain the inside first, as that in turn will explain the facade. At the heart of the gallery is a sequence of 5 double-height galleries, alternately square and oblong in shape, linked with high arches rather than doors. They form a central spine to the building, running from left to right as you face the front entrance. Joined to the main spine, at right angles, are 2 double-height wings. Lower and single-height galleries fill the spaces between the wings on both sides of the main spine, front and back. Protruding from the center of the back wall is the mausoleum. Protruding from the front is the entrance porch. Well, back to the outside. At first glance, the gallery appears only one story high. At first glance, too, it's close and stern, like a heavy block dropped onto the lawn. Long and low, undecorated and simple, it's only rescued from bleakness by the warmth of the honey-colored London bricks that Soane had to use. The lack of funds meant that his original choice of Portland stone was far too expensive. The facade reveals its secrets by the use of shallow recesses within deeper ones and monumental blocks of brick that jut towards us. The central porch block is also single-story height and is the only entrance on this facade. It leads to the interior, where it opens out into a reception area and out again in turn into the high, airy galleries in the main spine. This porch juts towards us, presenting you with a narrow arch between squared of pilasters, rather like the entrance to an Egyptian tomb. In it is a door painted pale sage green, through which you almost feel you have to squeeze, just as wide as necessary to let you in. The only other entrance is the wheelchair access at the side of the building. Each of the single stories on either side of the porch has a series of five tall arches facing you. No windows in them, as you might expect, but tall, undecorated arches that contain a shallow recess pushed back into the brick. These arches are the only curves in an otherwise determinately angular facade. The flat roof of the single stories have skylights set flush into them, so the lower roof line is undisturbed. But behind them, set well back, is a higher wall that brings the roof line of the whole building straight across. This is the wall of the double-height main galleries and the central spine below. On this higher roof are glass skylights, like mini greenhouses, that filter the daylight down into the galleries. These and other towers and turrets behind them yet again make the skyline almost playful. The great double-height brick blocks at either end of the central spine are massive, like twin bastions almost, jutting forward, even further forward and much wider than the central porch. Facing us on each of them is a single towering arched recess. This recess has no windows and is set between squared pilasters in which, two-thirds of the way up, is a narrow band of white stone that breaks the uncompromising sternness. This lighter moment is reinforced by a narrow band of white stone on which the whole building is set as its base, and another just below the roofline. It is the subtle recessing of the tall arches, the setting back of the higher roof, the sudden shallow angles in the brick, the sternness lifted by the golden brick, suddenly lit up by small flashes of white stone, that makes this beautiful and imaginative building so special and so exciting. And perhaps too by the deep green leaves of a mite magnolia tree that practically covers the whole of the right-hand block from view. In the spring, its rosy pink blossoms give the gallery a celebratory air. On the white lawns to the left of the building are many specimen trees, some taller than the building itself, but often, between the trees, touchable pieces of a contemporary sculpture are to be discovered, so that there is a strange mixture of tranquility and excitement that seems to sum up the experience of the gallery itself. Architecture is the tactile art above all others, and when I stand in a building, perhaps especially the Dulwich Picture Gallery, I can hear it around me, I can touch it too, but most importantly, I can sense it intuitively. When I step from the light of the galleries into the mausoleum, the quality of sound changes. I can hear the change in sounds from the echoes in the galleries to the dampening of the sound in the mausoleum. I can sense the coolness and restriction of the narrow passage and then the air of quiet contemplation as the passage opens into the shadowy dusk of the room inside. In the galleries themselves, I can sense the rightness of the classical ratio between the length and height of the tall gallery rooms discovered long ago in the Renaissance, the ratio of 2 to 3 of musical harmony. You can sense all the magic woven by a great architect by simply standing in Dulwich Picture Gallery. Please go and explore it for yourself.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to this slot in our previous editions. We're working hard to find something to put in its place.